Please share this amazing series with all of your relatives. My name is Melissa Spence. And like I said last time, Naganj. Later.
Words and Culture is made possible with funding from SiriusXM through the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Words and Culture is produced by Kim Wheeler. Kaylin Belair is our audio engineer and editor.
Onigiwahi.
Gigawabamin.
Soko seni denit e. Ninen yuji hina.
Ekose.
Kakuhutau. We'll see you again.
We would do anything for our kids. What parent wouldn't? I'm just glad they're still so young, so we can speak in code in front of them. But they must wonder why we're always camping.
Don't let homelessness assumptions get in the way of homelessness solutions. Go to CanadaCanDoIt.ca. Help the Canadian Alliance to End Homelessness.
This is Bird Note. Against the muted tones of the desert, Phaina peplas stand out boldly. A slim, sleek bird with a spiky crest, the name comes from the Greek for shining cloak. It refers to the male's glistening, inky black feathers, which are set off by piercing red eyes. And if the Greek name isn't helping you picture it, a common name might. The Goth Cardinal. Females are gray, and both sexes flaunt light-colored wing patches in flight. Phaina peplas have an elaborate courtship ritual. At twilight, a dozen or more join to fly in a circle. Females leave the flock to quickly consort with various males on their territories. The species has arrived at the unusual adaptation of nesting in two different habitats and seasons. From February to April, they nest as highly territorial pairs in the arid Sonora Desert. From May to July, they form sociable nesting colonies in leafy oak and sycamore canyons to escape the summer heat. Phaina peplas feed on mistletoe in the desert, which they help spread, and elderberries in the canyons. They're also adept at flycatching. And then there's that song. It just seems to fit a beautiful, shimmering bird. For Bird Note, I'm Ariana Rimmel.
This is the CHY News Update to inspire Indigenous youth and young adults with the world of aviation and aerospace. The Nanaimo Airport YCD hosted an event to highlight the wonders and opportunities in the industry. In cooperation with Indigenous Lift Collective, Alcan Air, Elevate Aviation Learning Center, Gulf Island Seaplanes, and Alley Bird Aero, the Nanaimo Airport hosted the Give Them Wings event to introduce Indigenous youth and young adults to aviation and aerospace-related careers. CHY attended the event on August 13th, with about 30 participants, with the live backdrop of the hustle and bustle of the airport. Keith Garen-Boyce is the Chief Financial Officer and VP of Business Development for CYD. He says this event came together as Indigenous outreach is very important. They want to provide opportunities for Indigenous youth to get exposure to aviation and see the opportunities for careers.
It's important to run an event. There is such a need and a demand for people in the aviation sector. And a big one is there seems to be a lot of people that just don't recognize aviation as being a really good career. And there's a lot of business type of jobs, but also trades. And right now it just seems like people aren't pushing trades as much.
He says right now aircraft maintenance engineers are one of the most in-demand jobs in aviation.
That's a big one. So there was a pilot shortage that seems to be working its way through, but the people that actually maintain the aircrafts, if there's not enough people to maintain the aircrafts, the planes aren't even getting up in the sky, there is no need for the pilots. So aircraft maintenance engineers is a great job, well-paying job. There's a big shortage of workers right now, and it's a great career to get into.
He says that youth interested in aviation should speak with their career guidance counselors in school, as there are many different career opportunities and many different education journeys to take. Participants of the event got behind-the-scenes look at the airport with tours of the grounds and equipment. They also got to meet with industry professionals, tried their hand at flying a plane with a flight simulator, and learned about aviation careers and opportunities with Give Them Wing Partners. Dina Jimenez is an air traffic controller and the Director of Community Engagement and Indigenous Partnerships for Elevate Aviation. She says Elevate Aviation is a not-for-profit meant to encourage more women and underrepresented groups to pursue aviation as a career. She says they give a platform for women in underrepresented groups to thrive and succeed through mentorship, bursaries, and skill training. She says the largest barrier for women in underrepresented groups working in aviation is simply the lack of awareness of the opportunities.
And traditionally, careers in aviation were something men would do. And it's just a very specific group of men. So, like most of us, we tend to do what we know, like maybe what our dad does or what our mom does, and go into a more typical traditional role. So by bringing out all these women with careers in aviation to talk to other women, makes them aware that these jobs exist and they can do them. And we tell our stories and how we got into them, and makes it more reachable. But the awareness is huge. Mm-hmm. And then the mentorship following the awareness is also huge. Help them get to where they need to be.
Jamez says that growing up, her dad loved aviation and would take her flying. But it wasn't until she was 26 years old that she became interested in flying.
And I was not happy with my job, with my life. And it was a good point, good time for me to start over. And my mom asked me, okay, this is your opportunity. What have you always wanted to do? And I said, fly an airplane. And that just came out of nowhere for me and for her. We both went, what? And I went, yeah, I really want to fly an airplane. I want to be a pilot.
She says it was during her flight training that she learned about air traffic control.
And at the same, so while I was doing my flight training, and this happens to everybody that learns how to fly, you talk to an air traffic controller in the tower and it's very intimidating. It's really scary. So I asked them, may I come up and visit the tower? If I could see their faces, maybe I won't be so scared to talk to them. And so scared of making a mistake, that's what it is. And I went up there and looked around and went, what? What is this? How come I didn't know about it? And so I applied to become an air traffic controller and I made it.
She says there's many jobs in aviation, but many people don't know they exist.
And there's so many careers around aviation. If you think about it, someone's got to design an airplane, build the airplane, paint the airplane, fly the airplane, ensure safety on the airplane, fuel the airplane, park the airplane, build the airport, clean the airport, run the airport, be in the tower. And there's so much. Someone has to do all the data planning for the airlines, for their customers, for their services, for their routing. Nav Canada, there's human resources, there's lawyers, there's airspace planners. There's such a huge variety of jobs in aviation that people just don't know about. And that's our mission, to get that information out there and to help people get in there.
She says 19% of North American air traffic controllers are women. Only 9 to 11% of commercial pilots are female, and less than 3% of air traffic maintenance engineers are women. She says these type of events are important to introduce the next generation who may have never thought about a career in aviation.
Well, I honestly believe even if you did change one person's life and they became someone in aviation, there's now a role model in that community. And someone people can look at and say, she's a pilot. She's an aircraft maintenance engineer. And they're like, I didn't even know that existed. Oh, and it's a woman. But just to have that one role model, it's going to snowball.
Stuart Myers is an Indigenous advanced care paramedic with BC Emergency Health Services and works as an advanced care flight paramedic based out in Nanaimo. He does medical transportation across the province. He says at 19 years old, he got into the career because of his passion for helping people.
I got my pilot's license when I started flying when I was 15 years old. I've got my pilot's license when I was 16. I started off into going down the pathway of commercial aviation, and realized I had more of a passion to go into the emergency medical services. I still have a pilot's license. I'm not current, but I'm fortunate enough now I get to fly. I get the opportunity to fly not only in the fixed wings, but I get opportunities to work with critical care teams and fly in the helicopters as well.
He says events like Give Them Wings are important to inspire the next generation of Indigenous youth to work in aviation.
There's so much to do. There's so much to see. The province is beautiful. The lands that we fly over, the places we go, it's really a wonderful profession. I'm blessed and thankful that I have that opportunity.
Benjamin Heald is one of the participants in the event. At 20 years old, Heald already had an interest in aviation. So when he heard of the event, he thought it was right up his alley. He says the day was filled with a lot of learning opportunities, and he got to try his hands at flying over the Comox Valley region in a flight simulator.
And then we just spent some time in a flight simulator, and that was outstanding. I got my hands on the controls for a little bit, right, which is, it was really cool. Very touchy controls, but the gentleman who built the simulator was there, and, you know, he was outstanding. He You could tell that he had a genuine passion for it, and he gave us the ins and outs.
Hield says he always thought about joining the military, but also has an interest in physical science. He says the sense of adventure flying with the Air Force has a big appeal on him.
I mean, everyone wants to be a pilot, you know, everyone wants to be Tom Cruise, Top Gun, you know. If I can make it, I'd love to, but if not, I just want to be a part of it, you know.
He says the biggest takeaway from the event is that the world of aviation is vast.
And there's a lot to know, a lot of complexities. It has kind of struck me that all my first step needs to just be getting out there and figuring everything out, like figuring what I want to do out and just meeting people. There's been a lot of great people today who've come to me and told me what they would do in my situation, say, hey, you're young, I would do this, I would do that. There's so many opportunities for you. I'm kind of realizing how many opportunities there are for me.
For now, Hield says he's looking at ways he can get involved with the aviation scene around Vancouver Island while he looks into education for down the line. Hopefully one day he will fulfill his dreams and finally take flight. For CHOI News, this is Lauren McKenzie.
This report was made with the support of the Local Journalism Initiative, the Community Radio Fund of Canada, and listeners like...
My best and most healthy relationship snuck up on me. I was in my late teens and started the relationship thinking I'd have a summer fling and maybe learn a little bit about dating in the process. I told myself, I'll dump him in September when school starts again. And then I ended up falling in love with him. We were together 5.5 years. Since then, I've had a string of relationships where the driving force was passion. It starts out strong with a blast of wild intensity and an all-encompassing fervor, but they end up being emotionally unavailable. I wanted to know what was happening and found some answers in attachment theory, which is research on the types of people we're attracted to and what happens when we get together. After delving into the attachment research, I started to purposefully date people who were better for me, but this came with much less excitement and passion. I found the process a little discouraging and a bit overwhelming. Dating like this was new territory. I became interested in doing a story on dating differently. I was curious about how this worked for others. And then I happened to bump into Mark at a party. He had gone through something similar, and he was willing to share his story. Mark and Eileen were set up by a couple of friends, and it was a bit awkward at first.
It was kind of a strange thing. It's, you know, when your parents tell you to talk to their friend's kid, it felt a bit like that, kind of a forced conversation.
As Mark will say, he felt obligated to talk to me.
Regardless, they ended up staying up most of the night and even took in the sunrise together. But it wasn't an instant connection. They went out a couple more times, but they didn't really pursue each other. After some prodding from friends on both sides, they start to date a bit more consistently.
In the beginning, I have to say part of it was that I kept thinking to myself, Mark's kind of crazy and he does all these wild things, but like he has very down-to-earth, lovely friends. And that was kind of like a stabilizing factor where I was like, you know what, I'm going to like see what's going on with this guy. Because I felt like he had some great characteristics. We had a lot of fun together. We had some stuff in common, but there were certain things like the lack of commitment and other things that would drive me a bit crazy.
Things like Mark finding it hard to commit to any plans with Eileen in case something better came along, or about how she'd barely see Mark when they went to parties together because he'd be off socializing and only realize he hadn't spoken to her all night when she'd find him to say goodnight. And these were the early days where you might expect just the opposite.
It was like pretty early on, like it must have been at like about a month or something. And I just said very casually to Mark, how do you think things are going? Which I thought was like a very normal question to ask someone that you had dated a bunch of times and seen a couple times a week for a month. And he like took this long pause and then he was like, well, I'd say I'm about 60% into you.
In my mind, I tend to think in terms of, I guess, too much like an engineer. And so I was tried to explain my rationale in terms of the way I'd been thinking previously about relationships starting at 100% and only dwindling. So trying to explain to her that, you know, I'm not at 100%, but it's increasing.
And I was so taken aback because first, definitely wasn't expecting a number. Like I had not expected him to like quantify it in numerical form. Secondly, I felt like 60 seemed like really low.
It's on the right side of 50% was what I was thinking. And it was only going to increase from there.
And he seemed like pretty delighted with this. And then he followed up by, no, well, it started way lower. I mean, I don't think like I'm an egoist, but at the same time, I don't feel like, you know, I need to be at a place where it's like, oh, well, look what the cat dragged in. Like, you know, I was also someone who's used to being a fairly high achiever. And to me, like 60 didn't seem that good. And I didn't really want to like know that. But that kind of speaks to Mark's like brutal honesty. He'll just say it like it is, you know.
Most of Mark's previous relationships started off quite differently. He was swept away by excitement and passion. They'd hook up and fall into relationship within a week's time, but they didn't last long.
I kind of notoriously had like a 3-month limit for my relationships and then would move on.
This is where attachment theory might come in handy. It's a psychological model that attempts to describe the dynamics of long and short-term relationships between humans. It's actually really accurate at predicting how people will behave in romantic relationships and whether they'll be matched based on their attachment styles. I found it immensely illuminating in my own life. It gave some context to the pattern I started to become aware of, one of being attracted to emotionally unavailable men and also being somewhat turned off people who were just the opposite and were available and present. Considering I've been a therapist for 10 years, you could say I came upon this info embarrassingly late, but I guess it's always easier to see what's happening in someone else's life than your own. There are 4 attachment types. People with a secure attachment are warm and loving. Relationships come easily to them, and they're great at communicating their needs and feelings. They're also comfortable with intimacy and independence. They're like the gold standard. People with an anxious attachment tend to be stressed out about their relationships. They love being very close to their partners, and they have the capacity for a lot of intimacy. However, they need a lot of reassurance and affection. People with an avoidant attachment style are fiercely independent and are often uncomfortable with intimacy. For them, the idea of commitment can be scary. They often construct their lifestyle in order to avoid commitment or too much intimate contact. So even though they want to be in relationship, they tend to keep their distance. The last attachment style is the combination of anxious and avoidant. With this type, the person is uncomfortable with intimacy and commitment, and at the same time, they have a strong desire to be in relationship. So how exactly do these attachment styles develop? They're actually formed through interactions with our parents as infants. Mark's three-month relationships unfolded in relatively the same way. The first month was fun and full of passion. The second month, as Mark put it, they'd be coasting. And by the third month, things already started to feel a bit old. No longer in the honeymoon phase, he would get antsy and bored. Small superficial things that his partner did would start to annoy him.
It was really silly. It was just like wearing the same ratty pants over and over. It was just something that I noticed that stood out. No longer kind of this perfect image that I had of the person.
Through the attachment theory lens, our reactions to our partner's small imperfections would be seen as an avoidant type's distancing reaction to the idea of commitment. And this can all happen subconsciously.
And that's where I noticed also that it wasn't so much about the person, but it was also about me and how I approach the relationships. I realized if I want to have a relationship that lasted longer than 3 months, I needed to learn to appreciate those things and be able to accept how a person is. I think it was just realizing that after seeing that pattern numerous times that it wasn't sustainable and this can't be how you build a long-term relationship.
I asked Mark and Eileen to read over a summary on attachment styles to see where they identified themselves on the attachment spectrum.
Maybe Eileen can answer better for me.
Yeah, that'd be interesting. He definitely started out with feeling uncomfortable when things are too close and intimate and valuing
really?
Independence and freedom. Yeah. Yeah, definitely. This is like classic. Mark is always surprised when I say something that I think is like completely obvious. I'll be like, oh, well, Mark really likes, you know, chicken. He's like, chicken? What do you mean I like chicken?
I guess I don't see myself in any boxes. So when someone sees me in a box, I'm always surprised by it.
Mark's reaction is understandable. Even though we may have a dominant attachment style, it's on a spectrum. So in most cases, we can have a bit of all styles in varying quantities. I take a guess that Mark would fall into the avoidant category. And Eileen sounds like a mixture of anxious and secure. You can see it playing out where Mark's more distant at first, and Eileen's looking for reassurance while still remaining grounded. I'm simplifying this all a bit, but you get it. There are predictable ways that the different attachment types tend to configure themselves into relationships. Secure types are capable of dating both anxious and avoidant types. They're comfortable enough with themselves to give anxious types all the reassurance they need and to give avoidant types the space they need without feeling threatened themselves. But opposites also attract. Anxious types are drawn to avoidant types and vice versa. For anxious types, avoidant types validate their abandonment fears and an insecurity of not being enough. In turn, avoidant types need someone to pursue them to meet the emotional needs that they subconsciously disown. I learned through my research that I was stuck in what's called the anxious-avoidant trap. I was the anxious one in this scenario. It was explained that I was attracted to avoidant types because they activated my attachment system. The attachment system is needed for survival. It's the system responsible for babies attaching to their caregivers. And it's the same system working in romantic relationships. So as an anxious person, getting mixed messages from an avoidant type and the tension that can arise from that activates the attachment system, which puts the person into overdrive to make the relationship work. And the feeling created in that reaction can get mixed up for feelings of like or love. And the other hard part is that if an anxious type meets someone who's secure and much better suited, the attachment system doesn't get activated. There's less drama, which can cause feelings of boredom. So if you're an anxious type, there's a good chance you'll automatically interpret calmness in the relationship as lack of attraction.
I would say Mark is like very comfortable with intimacy, and I'd say that you don't obsess where the relationship's going or my ability to love you back. I would say he's moved towards this.
Meaning secure attachment.
For me, I would probably have started out more with like having some insecurity about where the relationship was going, and some of the things Mark did like really setting me off and driving me crazy. So more in the anxious and then gone more into the secure. We started in different boxes but ended up in the same one.
And that's exactly what can happen. Our attachment styles aren't fixed, thank goodness. They may lead us astray at points, but it's possible to develop a secure attachment at any age. Change occurs mostly when you get into a relationship that really shakes your beliefs about love. If, for example, you expect people to let you down or reject you once they get to know the real you, and then you meet someone who's supportive and loving no matter what, over time, you'll likely become more secure. So even though we don't have control over the type of attachment style that gets formed in infancy, we're not doomed.
I think I remember the turning point there. It was a discussion where we had where, I guess a lot of couples have that, their like first fight, but then realizing that the person's going to stick through it. And I think that's where things probably kind of changed. Whereas in my previous relationships, it would have been like, okay, time to move on. Whereas this then was like, oh, okay, well, even if things are rough, this person's going to stick it out and we'll figure it out and work through it. I guess it just, for me, was not a pattern that I had been used to in my previous relationships. And so knowing that having a fight wasn't the end of the relationship was, I think, a really positive thing.
What was it that showed you, hey, this isn't going to be the end of us?
I think it was her reaction saying, you know, that we're not breaking up. Just even hearing that was a very good thing for me to hear. And I'm holding her to it now. And now we're at the point where I like talking about things a lot more than Eileen does.
Yeah, Mark's an excellent communicator.
I have to admit, I was disappointed by their story. Even a bit bored. Was that it? No big ups and downs. No big revelations. Just two people growing together and finally realizing their opposite traits are complementary. And then I realized I was still chasing excitement. If not through my own story, but through others. And it's not about excitement. It's about companionship, which can still involve excitement. Mark and Eileen have tons of fun together. They play, they joke. They're cool folks. In my own life, trying to break the pattern hasn't been easy. I've come up with the term dating in the middle to describe my experience. I'm trying not to run after fireworks, but I also need to feel something. So I guess that's the middle. But it's all still pretty new. When I meet someone nice and attractive enough, who I might not feel wildly excited about, I think, give this a chance. But also, I keep reminding myself that distance is my kryptonite. I think danger, stay away. But I'm still pulled towards it. It's not easy out there, especially when my compass has been stuck pointing north to emotionally unavailable men for years. It's going to take some time getting comfortable dating differently. But I think it might be worth it.
Part of my philosophy now in terms of being in a long committed relationship and my fear of missing out, you know, is that this is a great opportunity to have this lifelong commitment to someone. And if I'm not faithful, it will actually ruin that. And that's what I'm going to be missing out. I'd be missing out on a lifelong partner and building a life together with someone. And so it's just kind of turning it around, kind of using my weaknesses as a strength.
And so how many years in now?
11.
It's a long time.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're close to 100% now too.
You want some cool new music to listen to? Want to know about up-and-coming artists, albums, and more? Well, come hang out with me every Tuesday from 12 to 1. Raccoon City's where I'll be. Hope to see you there.